Listen. Listen. The SETI project is an attempt to contact other intelligent life forms in the universe. The hope is that such beings would have advanced far beyond us and thus would have invaluable information that could save our world from many of its impending crises. Radio frequencies are constantly being scanned for any decipherable communication from the sky. It's not known what the communications might be. It's not known if our electronic ears are sharp enough to hear it. And finally, it's not known if anyone out there is talking. What is at the heart of the project is the faith that we are not the only advanced life form that has evolved and that other people are interested in letting us know they are there and that they want to communicate. Now, there is another older project with strikingly similarities to this one. Religion is an attempt to contact another intelligent life form in the universe. The hope is that God has advanced far beyond us and thus has invaluable information that will save our world from all of its many impending crises. Religions are constantly being scanned for any intelligible communication from God. It's not known in what form this communication might be. It's not known if our ears are sharp enough to hear it. And finally, it's not known if God is talking. What's at the heart of the continuing project is the faith that we are not alone and that God wants to communicate. Children are not at all hesitant about how they try to communicate and contact God. To talk to God and listen for God's word, some of the most direct approaches and honest questions to, for, and about God come from kids. So here are three short letters from children to God. This is from Bobby. Dear God, I don't think you were listening when I asked you to make me a better player. So I'm sending it by mail so you can read it when you have the time. Here's my picture so you will know who I am. So long, Bobby. There's a note from Harriet Ann. Dear God, are you real? Some people don't believe it, is what she said. If you are real, you better do something quick. And one more from Alan, a New Yorker. Dear God, if you do all these things, you are pretty busy. Now, here's my question. When is the best time I can talk to you? I know you're always listening, but when will you be listening real hard in Troy, New York? Sincerely yours, Alan. It seems to me that these young people are on the rim of the Grand Canyon of doubt. Bobby is sure that God needs help picking him out of the other kids, so he sends his picture. Alan, who seems well along the path to city government, wants to know the best time to get an appointment for the people living in Troy, New York, and Harriet Ann is expressing her concern that God may not even be real. Furthermore, she's giving God both an ultimatum and some solid advice. She says, things are getting pretty doubtful for lots of people, and that God better do something quick. I'm sure that these children expected some clear form of communication and were disappointed. As we get older, our expectations and hopes of sensory communication direct from God continue to fade. They fade, but still millions of people hang on even to the thinnest thread of hope. One of the most forlorn phrases I have heard is this one, next year in Jerusalem, I hear it said with a sigh that must grow every year as one goes through life. Next year, next year, Next year, please. It's a temptation to push this back, to rationalize it away, to say that such waiting for a loud, clear voice from outer space or a return of someone like King David was from an earlier, less enlightened age, or that it's only for children. Nowadays, most all of us have abandoned any hope of clear sensory communication from beyond. Either God is dead, never existed, or lost interest in trying to speak to us. Or perhaps we are just too backward a life form to understand anything God might be saying. Let's pursue this a little bit. Really, how can we expect to understand God's words, even assuming we actually hear them? I'll give you an example, an illustration. One day, I was sitting by a stream that flows through the Calaveras Big Tree State Park in California. As I sat there, I noticed a black beetle scrabbling around in the rocks. So here's the river, there's some rocks, and then there's the nice grassy bank on the side. But it seems like this beetle was heading for disaster, straight for the rushing water, straight away from the grassy bank. Well, you can imagine my predicament. Trying to find a way to communicate to that little bug, the folly of its poor choice of direction, the error of its way. The only thing I could do would be to flick it to the bank with what would seem to it an omnipotent finger. And even then, I doubted that it would understand my intent, my most benevolent concern for its own good in spite of the suicidal career choice. We certainly didn't share any common language, at least not one that I was aware of. How to speak to a lower life form? Or how to hear words of wisdom coming from above? Listening with all its might, the beetle was certain not to understand my command to turn around, about face, dummy. There could be no verbal communication. There would be no meaningful contact other than the human, godlike intervention, the miraculous from the beetle's point of view, the miraculous finger flick. Well, I thought, perhaps this is the same problem God has when trying to speak to us. And the problem we have is the beetle's problem, trying to understand what's spoken. No common language, too great a separation, and neither side can figure out how to connect. Other possibilities come to mind. Perhaps God doesn't have any more interest in getting to know us than I had in getting to know the personal life of the beetle. As we learn more about what an insignificant part of the universe we occupy, many of us come to believe that we're not worth the effort, that God is too busy and important to listen to Troy, New York, or Vancouver, Canada. He, she, or it is only interested in greater stuff. We had our chance a few thousand years ago, and we muffed it. God is off somewhere, perhaps trying to teach a stone to talk, tired of flicking humans away from the raging river of death and onto the safe, grassy Edens of life. Well, okay, so that is the stuff and fluff of fairy tales, but the problem hasn't gone away. How can we communicate with the transcendent? How can we hear beyond the range of our ears and eyes and other senses? How does one listen when there are no words, no sights or smells or tastes or touches? Two things are essential, I think. The first is the belief or faith, to use the older word, that there really is something with which to communicate, to listen for and to, and with which to speak. This is the basis of the SETI search, isn't it? With all of those huge radio telescopes bouncing signals and listening. They assume that there's something with which to speak. that there really are other celestial beings circling other shining stars, and that these beings are at least as intelligent as we are, and that they are interested in having a conversation. So that's the first part, a trust that the search will not be in vain, that God or some evolved creature exists and cares. But that blind faith is not enough to sustain us for very long. I don't know about you, but I'm a bit like Harriet Ann. If God's going to keep my trust, then God better do something quick. I need more than an intellectual hat-tipping acquaintance with the transcendent. I need to have personal experiences to back up this brazen business of belief. And you know, I haven't been disappointed. I believe there are several ways that we can, that we all can listen to the transcendent. And I'll be the first to admit that all of them are questionable, unscientific, untestable, and more or less unreliable. But with that minor caveat, here they are. The first is one that people experience every night, dreams. Jeremy Taylor, as you may or may not know, is a Unitarian minister. He lives in California, has made his entire ministry, his work on studying dreams. And I've seen him work with dreams of people. He calls it unpacking the messages from the dream. And he's as skillful as what the Bible would say Joseph in explaining the dreams of the Pharaoh. I've witnessed him help a dreamer find insights from the tiniest shred of a dream that was recalled, and even find life-changing truth packed into these nightly images. It's convinced me that Jeremy's dictum that, quote, every dream comes to the dreamer with a message for his own health and wholeness. He also points out that the language of dreams is a common one. He wrote, dreaming is a universal human phenomenon which unites us all across the barriers of age, sexual difference, racial background, social class, religious, political, social attitudes, cultural, historical circumstances, even profound mental and emotional disturbance. We discover that dreams speak a universal language of metaphor and symbol. So they don't need it to be in English or Chinese or Hebrew or whatever. A metaphor and symbol. Even if you don't accept the notion that dreams may be one of the connections to the transcendent, you might agree that if you were God, you might want to use some language that bridged all languages, all cultures, all mental states, and all time. Jeremy further commented that every dream has an element of synchronicity. I want to suggest to you that this human experience, these times of synchronicity in our lives, is another form of superhuman to human communication. I've experienced it. I'll give you an example. When I was debating whether or not to enroll at Star King for the Unitarian Universal training for ministry, I was worried about how I could afford to do it for 3 years or more without a paycheck. I had an acquaintance who I had known in engineering schools as well as after that I had made, and he was quite a successful writer of engineering texts. And I was at an engineering conference, and I hoped to connect with him, but he wasn't enrolled in the conference. He hadn't registered, so I had given up on that. But as I was walking through the area of demonstrations of textbooks and devices and so forth, there he was. He just stopped in for a couple of moments to speak with his book publisher. We chatted. He told me of his problems, and I told him of mine. He told me that he was looking for someone to help him write a new textbook, and would I be interested? Guaranteed amount of money would be involved. Pure chance, perhaps. but it really helped me make my decision. And on arriving at Star King and talking with other students who also had concerns about how to manage the money for the times that would be, I learned of two more such synchronous solutions to money worries and several other events that happened just at the right time, at the right place, that abated their concerns. Now, to take this one step farther, I want to talk about what next is the times when events happen that are like synchronous times, but a little different. The difference is that here, some following action from the hearer is needed. Synchronous things happen all the time, but you don't really have to do anything with them. You can just recognize them. But these next step, I actually called nudges. In some ways, it's like what the Quakers call that still small voice within. So listening for a feeling and then following it up. It's very subtle, and that makes it easy to ignore or disclaim. The summer before I graduated from ministry school in Star King, I was in England. I had 2 whole months to travel around. I had no definite plan of where to go or when. So I started out, of course, in London and headed for the Cotswolds. I was going to do some long-range hiking, and I happened to be on a bus that went through Oxford, and it had a layover of an hour there. So I knew that in Oxford University there was a college, Manchester College, which was actually a Unitarian college of the great university, Oxford University, although it was really turning out very few students. Anyway, I had the feeling that some knowing on the subconscious level that this was the right thing to do. And I walked to the college and asked around. And I met a minister who had been there for the summer, John Farmacus, who was delighted to talk about the college and take me to a nice little restaurant, I guess you'd call it. I'm not sure if restaurant's the right name for tea and crumpets. Anyway, he was leaving for Massachusetts the next week, and we discussed Manchester and Star King and both got excited about the possibilities between the two schools. Then I hurried back to catch my bus. The feeling that I was moving in the right direction was clear. I was invited to come back to Oxford 2 weeks after that to attend their graduation ceremony, and I met their principal, or the president, as we would call him, and he was interested in further connections between the two schools. And since then, there have been some efforts to do that very thing, to have better connection. Anyway, as I went along on my trip, I became more and more aware of times when I sensed these nudges go one way or not another. I don't know what to make. I don't want to make more of them than is there, but I don't want to make less of them either. Each time I noticed and followed one, I had a positive experience. Emerson wrote this: "That well-known voice speaks in all languages, governs all men, and none ever caught a glimpse of its form. If the man will exactly obey it, it will adopt him. He shall seem to be it. He shall be it. If he listen with insatiable ears, richer and greater wisdom is taught him. If not, the voice grows faint, and at last is but a humming in the ears." Emerson seems to be describing, with his own flowery words, what I was calling nudges. And their voice, as he noticed, is quite soft. Perhaps the loudest voice that the transcendent uses is labeled by what some call visions. This communication is powerful. It seems akin to the notion that some superpower is flicking us with an omnipotent finger to do something different than we planned. Visions are nearly always reported as much more than words and beyond words to describe. Their experience is as powerful as what Paul reported happening to him on the road to Damascus. They're what Annie Dillard is stretching to describe when she wrote about the tree with lights or the field of silence. These voices, quote, dreams, synchronicity, nudges, and visions only require an open and trusting soul. There are two more voices of the transcendent. These involve more of our participation and interaction. The first is meditation. Deep personal truths can come to one in meditation. The practice is a great aid in being aware of what feelings you're experiencing and what lies behind them. And it's been tested for well over 2,000 years. People have used a variety of forms of meditation or prayer, which is really sort of the same thing, although the chance of learning with prayer is reduced since the person is talking rather than listening. Some meditation times present dreamlike images to the meditator, faces or pictures of places unknown to them. Other times, more powerful experiences may occur, which are pretty close to what the vision stories are like. Actually, there's a book that was written by some group in Oxford that listed several hundred accounts of visions. I used to have a copy. Anyway, there other times are talking about visions. The goal of enlightenment for a few seconds may happen in the deep meditation. But usually it's just a time for collecting the warm feeling of peace. So that was one of the two final things. So finally, for all of us, there is beauty. More and more, I'm just knocked over by the wonder of it. The world has so much packed down, full of measure. And yes, it is beyond words. Just stand in awe, laugh or cry or dance or sing for it. Enjoy it and yourself and the creative power in you and all others that weave it. Alfred North Whitehead wrote, "God is the poet of the world, with tender patience leading it by his vision of truth, beauty, and goodness." There's so much written about beauty and so much music composed reflecting on some beautiful thing that is experienced by the composer. All that's needed mostly, though, is to be still and listen. There are words to hear. Some mysterious power is speaking in universal language, in dreams, through synchronicity, by little nudges, in powerful visions, in our meditations, and through the beauty of the world. There is much to hear. It's rich and simple, though perhaps not easy. Just listen to the world within and without. The world is broadcasting its word like seed, broadcasting with a persistent initial aim right at you, and hoping that you have chosen to listen. Amen.